Galatians 5, 22 and 23, New International Version. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance or patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such there is no law. Morning, everybody. When we agree to join a Unitarian Universalist community, we don't take on a creed. What we do is we essentially covenant that we will affirm and promote seven principles. And I know you know what they are, but I'll just read them so we're all talking about the same stuff. Number one, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Number two, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Three, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Four, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Five, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Six, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And number seven, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Now, we are working on an eighth principle, but that's for another time to discuss, but I want to let you know that we are working on that. So when I came through these doors and, you know, started participating in this community, I thought, okay, I understand these things, I support these things, I can affirm and promote these things. I'm good with that. And then they started talking about beloved community. I'm like, okay, well, I've heard that too. You know, I've heard it from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., but I know that he got it from another guy named Josiah Royce. And I know that that community is really committed to essentially what we have in our sixth principle, community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. The kind of thing where you would have poverty being eliminated, because it's not like our planet lacks the resources, it's just that we don't share them equitably. So I could sign on to all of that. But then I got to the point of, well, okay, you're talking about this beloved community, I'm a part of this community, I would like to participate and contribute. So what bricks do I use? What seeds do I sow to get this beloved community? Because I know it's not Narnia. It's not something out there that I'm going for. It's something in here. And what's really more important about that is I had to turn to an ancient Eastern religion for answers. And guess what that religion might be? Christianity. Yep. I said it. I know some of you don't believe it, but yep, that's exactly what it is. Because as much as the Western propaganda, and particularly the Western evangelical propaganda, and it's not to disparage people of that faith, I was one for like 25 years, it's not to disparage that, but it is to be clear about what the origins of Christianity are and were, and what the intent of it was. And so I look to the book of Galatians in the New Testament, and that's where I read about the fruit of the Spirit for you in the reading. And I look at that book because that book is talking about a community that has to build itself. It must literally start from ground zero and build itself up. And I don't know how many of you know anything about the Old Testament, but let's start with the beginning. We start with Palestine, Israel, whichever one you choose to discuss. Everybody has the blood of Abraham, so we'll go with that. But the bottom line is, basically Jews lived in that area, and then there was a group that came along and said, we believe that the Messiah has come. And so some of the Jews within those communities said, okay, we believe you. We believe that the Messiah has come. And what many people aren't in touch with is the fact that really, for probably the first 2,000 years, what we know as Christianity was just a basic sect of Judaism. They were all Jews. All 12 apostles were Jewish men. Not Christian men, and certainly not Christian Western men. They were Jewish Eastern men. And so then these communities are going, they're getting kicked out of their synagogues because, you know, they believe the Messiah has come. There's already both political, cultural, and religious strife. And then you get to why Paul is writing this letter to the Galatians. And really, it just as by way of background, most of the things that you have in the New Testament of the Bible are actually letters written by someone or several people to another group of people. And so they collected these letters and they put them together. Of course, there's debate about what should be in there and what shouldn't be in there. But again, for another time. However, with the Galatians, the issue was Gentiles, yes, for those who were coming in to this community. And to some people, the very idea of that was repugnant. Because these were people who weren't even allowed to sit at the same table to eat together. They could not touch each other. They could have no contact with one another because of their cultural and religious rules. And so now they're going to be allowed to come into this sect? The answer is yes. And the answer is yes. So for many of us in this room who were raised in Christian households or in Christian communities, most of us are Gentiles. So we came in after. And that's also important to remember. So what's going on here is that there are Jewish communities where there are people saying that the Messiah has come, and now they've allowed Gentiles to come in. But then some of the people in that Jewish community, because remember, a lot of times that meant that you got kicked out of your synagogue. So it wasn't a pleasant life to have. I mean, when you made this choice, you were making a pretty bold choice to begin with. And so some of the people, to kind of placate the people in the synagogue, said, okay, we'll let you in, Gentiles. However, you need to still follow Jewish law. And some of the big arguments are, A, the dietary restrictions of the time, the following of the Sabbath, but guess what the big one was? Circumcision. Sorry, guys. And so Paul hears about this, and he says, as my cousin would say to her littered daughter, no, 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 no. You aren't welcomed into this community because you follow the law. You're welcomed into this community because you believe the Messiah has come. Whether you want to debate that or not, that's, again, another time. But this is what's going on here. And so in order to placate the people who are trying to get them to follow Jewish tradition, some of the Gentiles were agreeing to this. And so Paul writes this scathing letter, which is what this is, and says, no, you will not do that, because if you do that, then it means you abandon your faith. Don't do it. But I tell you what you will do. You are free. You are free as Gentiles and as Jews to do as you choose. And in your freedom, what I am asking of you is not to indulge your freedom and not to indulge your flesh. And then he goes on with a whole list of what the things of the flesh are, and some might be very surprised about what that list is. So if you get a chance, you might want to read it. But then he goes on to say, you know, that law that they were trying to get you to follow, let me tell you what that law is. And remember, Paul is speaking as a Jew. And he's saying, look, for the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this command: love your neighbor as yourself. And for some of us, we think, oh, that came around in the 18th, 19th century. Somebody in southern Alabama came up with that. No, this is 2,000 years ago in Turkey, essentially, because now biblical scholars, of course, argue about where this is. But most of them agree, this is Turkey. This is the East. Nothing to do with crossing the Atlantic. And these people, just to understand what their situation is, it isn't just about being kicked out of the synagogues. Because for a lot of Gentiles, what that also meant is they had to break ties with family, with friends. Some of them, depending on if you belong to a guild, you couldn't buy in the marketplace. So your choices made your life a very severe and hard place to live. And we think our lives are hard now. Just imagine if you make a choice that means that you can never, ever see your family again. But not just that, when you walk into the marketplace, everybody knows that you've made that choice and they refuse to sell to you, even food. So that's the kind of hardships that these people are dealing with. And he says, look, you know, this is bad. You know, I know you're being thrown to the lions. I know all of these bad things are happening, but this is what you need to do. You need to sow something that will build you up and build your community up. And when I say sow, what I mean is anything. You put your time, your money, your thoughts, your attention, your power, your privilege, your resources, any of those things. I have a confession. I sowed 8 hours into the marathon binge watching of Stranger Things. I liked it. Thought it was fabulous. Yeah, but you know, what that meant though is those 8 hours weren't going to be spent somewhere else. I had that choice. I sort of kind of, you know, cut out some time for that and lost a little bit of sleep. But hey, well, Stranger Things, you know? And so what he says to them is, this is where I want you to focus. This is what I want you to sow. This is what I want you to build, both in yourselves and in this community. And the thing is, these communities in Turkey and throughout the rest of the Eastern world really faced a lot of hardship. But he doesn't say, oh, go buy as many weapons as you can, or make sure you barricade yourselves in perfectly. He says the first thing is love. Agape, not the I like you, you like me, therefore we'll be friends. It's the love that thinks as much as it feels. It's the love that chooses to always do right by the other person. It always sees its object as worthy. It is the kind of love that the scriptures talk about that God has for the universe. And whether you believe in God or not, it's just a description of what that is. And agape is not namby-pamby or quiet. It is brave and it is strong. And it will say something like, I love you. And with tears falling and heartbreaking, you must go to rehab or you cannot come home. That is agape, because it seeks the best for that person and not just to be pacified. The next thing is joy. And George Campbell Morgan talks about that as joy is love's consciousness. And what that means is that you appreciate who you are and what you have. So when your neighbor drives up with the latest and greatest or whatever, or somebody shows up in the office with the latest and greatest or whatever, while you can appreciate what they have, you are not moved about who you are or what you have. It is not happiness. It is not transient. It is not fickle. It really is grounded. So part of this is you have to know yourself and appreciate yourself in order to have this. The next thing is peace. And often people think, well, that means there's no war, there's no conflict. No, that is not what it means. Peace is not the absence of conflict, but it is the ability not to be seduced by fear or anger or ego or self-pity in a situation. It is the choice not to panic. That is peace. And then there's forbearance or patience. And that's the ability to avenge yourself, but choosing not to. The ability to endure. It also connotes the fact that you don't rush the process. Everything doesn't have to be done yesterday. We put too much pressure on ourselves and too much pressure on outcomes. Basically, we live in a world that says, I want it now. And I know I have a very high pressure job. And often what will happen is things are rushed, they get out. And then they come back and you have to do them all over again because nobody took the time to do it right the first time. We must be patient with ourselves, and we must be patient with each other. The next thing is kindness, and that's described as goodness in action, and I'll get to goodness in a minute. But it's a way of thinking that leads us to be compassionate, to be considerate, to act with care. And then, of course, the next thing is goodness, and that's moral excellence, honesty, integrity, incorruptibility, sincerity. Wouldn't you want to be around a person like that? Children are really good with this. You know, you have a child walk in the room, they see a person, they run up to them, they say, oh, you're great. They see another person, then they keep going. Children are really good at detecting these things, and often we probably should watch them more to kind of follow their lead on what's going on. The next part of this fruit is called faithfulness, and it's a commitment to something or someone. Like, I made a commitment to this community. And faithfulness is doing what you say you will do, when you say you will do it. Showing up, being trustworthy, being reliable. Now, he's telling them this kind of stuff as people are trying to kill them. He's like, no, I don't care. This is what you got to do. And then there's gentleness. And in a lot of modern translations, it's actually gentleness, but the actual word is meekness. How many people here want to be meek? In our culture, it's really, or we are told, it is not to our advantage to be meek. But the actual ideal of meekness is the Christ, is the Messiah. He is specifically described as being meek. The Beatitudes say, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Because what it means is someone who is even-tempered. Their strength is under control. They know how to use their power. A good example of that, again, would be kids. You know when you have a toddler and you have something very fragile around them, or you have like a new baby in the house and they rush up to see it? And what do you say? Gentle. Because it is presumed that they have the power to destroy, and you tell them, restrain your power. So when we talk about meek, we are not talking about people who just take whatever comes, but they choose appropriately how to use their power. The final one is self-control, and that's the ability to control your thoughts and actions. Discretion. You have to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You control yourself. And often in situations, what happens is the situation escalates, not because the other person has done something, but because we, and I'm pointing to me, has done something, and I have not been in control of myself. And the important thing to know about these nine things is that they are actually a single fruit with nine segments. They are meant to go together. They are meant to grow together. And when we think about creating any community at all, but particularly beloved community, and God forbid that any of our communities should come under the kind of pain that these communities 2,000 years ago in the East were dealing with, this is where we have to go. We have to be able to do these things because it makes us just better people all around. You know, Zoe Libby has this cool shirt on, and it says, kindness is always in style. Because it is. Because for the past 2,000 years, kindness has never gone out of style. And so that's what this is saying. So that there's no law against this. And when we are like this, we can face what comes. And as I said, I hope that we don't have to deal with the things that they have dealt with. But the truth of the matter is, against these things, there is no law. Thank you.